Let's talk about your Electro Nachos t-shirt.
What is up, everybody? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Sort of. Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you from some very spotty internet connections out here. The internet's been having trouble all day.
Storms.
Only A's Alps. I got that crispy internet. It is popping. I'm in upstate New York in a weird New England shack. I'm living it up. It's great.
Amazing. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kick this off with everybody's favorite section of the month. And really, this is one of my favorite sections because it's the time that we thank the amazing folks that support us over at Patreon. So we're going to read through some names. These are people, again, who support us on Patreon. We really appreciate their patronage. So let's kick it off with Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Wow. Amy Gonzalez.
Oh, you're on a delay. Andrew Edge. This is going to be great.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Benjamin Brown.
Carly W.
Christina Jaramillo.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Curtis LaRock.
Deman Ryan.
Dan Snow.
Dancer Danny Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Warden.
Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quiche.
Arian Dorian. Aaron Dorian.
Jeffrey Reischer.
Gerard De Villiers.
Isaac Carter.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jason Donahue.
Jolene.
John George, happy birthday!
Happy birthday. Ooh, Jonathan John.
Happy birthday. Jonathan McCool.
Joshua Gibson.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Catherine Aninson.
KC New Haven.
Kevin Grimes.
Oh, he froze. So we just finished. Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Kyle.
Lee Brown.
Juana Thomas.
Oh, man. I couldn't even get Lucas Sink.
Mark Carrillo.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Megan Thigpen.
Michael A. Sargent.
Michael Tillman.
Mike D'Argenio.
Mitchell McDonald.
We are DJs. Nelson Martinez.
And Nick Brenton.
Nick Grayson.
Off-White Savior. Ooh, that's
official CBC chef, Brett Macris.
Yeah, Brett Macris and Brett Macris's friend. Amia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pablo Martinez.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Prime Top Pauly G.
And of course, you got your boy, Rev Mikey.
Salute your shorts.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamelia Rush.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Banch.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
W.M. Litch.
Zika's Viral Comics.
Guys, that's some fun. I think we just said all the right names. And now here we are.
Am I hanging here? Am I here? Can you hear me?
You're back.
I'm back.
It feels like
a ghost.
Welcome back.
You are on.
You're on delay.
I'm on a delay. It's very weird because from my screen, this is not interesting to everybody. From my screen, it looks on time and it looks clear and pristine, but it makes you kind of feel like you're a ghost here. Like you're just like nobody knows you're there. It's sad and scary.
Oh, fuck. I can't believe we have to tell you, Alex, you did die. And this is your unfinished business is this podcast.
I'm sorry, neither one of us are Bruce Willis to break that to you.
All right. Well, we had a lot of storms here today, so I apologize to everybody if I am weird and delayed. Also, maybe the storms are because of this little drink that we made with our Patreon Slack today from Gotham City Cocktails by Andre Darlington. This is the Peña Duro, the official drink of main prison.
Oh, you almost got through it, and then it got froze.
I'm staying back about a year ago, early pandemic. I stayed in this Airbnb. We came back here in slight upstate New York. And when we came back here this year, they had a kegerator in the kitchen.
Oh, that's dangerous. That's dangerous. How many is that for you? Number 15? 16?
This one's number one. Look how full it is. Oh, I could never. It's the first sip.
Well, get going, man. Come on. It's Tuesday. What are you doing?
It is Tuesday. Alex, you have an offer from First Hand Up Guy to come over to his house. He does live near you and use his internet.
Oh, that would be great. Did he hear me say that would be great, or am I still a ghost?
No, you're good.
Yep. Great. You're back.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to try to welcome our guest in here. Maybe you guys can handle the bulk of the interview since I'm slowly dying.
We are good at that.
But our first guest is one of our favorite guests here on the show. He is the writer of Birthright, which is finishing up its 50-issue run for Image
Comics
tomorrow, which is very exciting. Which is very exciting. Joshua Williamson, one of our favorites to have here on the show, as I mentioned. Maybe you heard, maybe you didn't. Who does really know? But ladies and gentlemen, Joshua,
hello.
Hello
again, everyone. How are you doing? I think we are.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be interesting.
So good. Yeah, we're all like on different speeds, basically. It's like somebody playing music. We're like a barbershop quartet. So we're like, hello, 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 hello. Yes. Josh, congratulations. First of all, this is incredible. I was looking at the back matter, and we won't get into spoilers necessarily for the last issue, but man, this has been over a decade for you at the point on this book. What is the experience like finally tackling it, finally writing those last words on the last page?
Super weird. You know, it's I mean, I basically came up with the idea for this book back in 2007, and was still figure it out, and I couldn't crack it for a long time, and I did talk about this a lot in the back matter, but it was like I could never figure it out. And then around 2013, I started finally starting to gather, you know, the ideas and really started to come together. And you know, and so even from the very beginning, I always knew what that ending was going to be. And so yeah, finally writing it, it was definitely emotional. I remember like taking a walk basically once I got to it, you know. It really was this whole idea of coming together with family, without getting too much spoilers and stuff about it's a lot having to do with like found family and things like that. And so really trying to get to that point was definitely very emotional, because like I talked about in the back of the book, you know, it's like a lot of this stuff was going on with me emotionally over all this time, and sort of my journey kind of mirrored Mikey's in weird ways, you know. And so to get to that ending and to finally have those words at the end, it was definitely very, like, I don't know, it was really a strange feeling. Like, I feel weird that I'm done with it now, because it's been such a part of my life. I mean, it's also really weird, like, you know, how do I put this? Like, when you're breaking into comics, one of the pieces of advice people tell you all the time is don't pitch a 50-issue epic.
Yeah.
50-issue epic, and I've heard people, even back then, to this day, I'll still say it, but the fact that I was able to do a 50-issue epic, it was a fantasy epic about family, is wild to me, you know, and I get to have it on my shelf forever, and I have a bunch of pieces of art from it. I've actually, Andre has told me I can pick whatever I want from.
Oh, wow.
Here's the thing, I wanted the last two pages, and I forgot to tell Andre this beforehand. Now, Adriana, who's the colorist, who's colored every page of all 50 issues, has never asked for a page until he colored the last page, and he told Andre, I want the last two pages. When I saw the email thread, I was like, dude, of course you have them. You know, it's like, you colored this book for 50 issues, of course you have those last two pages. But yeah, I have to go through issue 50. I have it right here with me. I need to go through and pick. I might actually pick the cover. I don't know.
I mean, the cover sort of is another version of that, you know, sort of maybe that feels like the larger, you can sort of hold the whole book in that image in a way.
Yeah. Well, there's also the trade cover to volume 10, which kind of mirrors the first trade cover. So there's all kinds of little stuff that I could probably do. Well, that's the thing about this. I don't know who has the issue one cover. I think the person that has issue one cover might be Kirkman. Because some people in Skybound have certain things. But this cover, it mirrors the cover to issue one, where it's Mikey standing in front of a door. Mm-hmm. And you see there's like the archway here has an angel, but on the first issue it has a devil. So there's all kinds of...
Ooh, nice.
So I kind of wish I had both of them and put them next to each other. But yeah, I think Kirkman actually has issue one. The other thing that I want is an issue 42, I think, maybe 43, there was like a six-page...
Oh, yeah.
...war scene that he did. I actually think that's in the Skybound offices.
Wow. That's just like,
sometimes I'm like, oh, man. Because they have that. There was a promo image they did that was like 10 covers long almost, that we did the very beginning that was a promo image, and that's the Skybound. That is in Skybound, I know that for sure. But yeah, it's super weird to write those last few words, man. Like, it was just strange. It's a strange feeling to work on this thing and have it be a part of your life. But in weird ways, again, like I said this, it was mirroring my life as I was going, you know? So,
wow.
Like, when they had their kid in the book, when they first had their daughter, that was the exact same time I was having my daughter. So it was,
yeah.
Always weird parallels across with that series. And so it's...
Well, the thing about babies, I'll just mention.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You solicit babies pretty far in advance.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah, you do. There is
a period there. The beats in this book were planned long before I was even married. So it's like, you know, it all kind of came together. What were you going to ask me, Justin?
I was going to say, I mean, I love this book. I've talked about this book from the jump. I mean, it's really, so I'm so excited. I was so excited to read this last issue. What's it, you're talking about, the way that the book affected you and you affected the book. Can you talk a little bit more about the book affecting you as your life and the book were sort of traveling together? Were you like looking at your life through the lens of the book, if that makes sense? Like learning from your own work in a weird way?
Yeah, I was. Because I was learning stuff about family. I mean, what's interesting is like the ending to this book is almost exactly the same we had planned it from the very beginning. Right, like it was this whole thing of he was gonna go and find Callista. So here are the beats that never changed. He was gonna find Callista, he was gonna confront her, she was gonna die, and then he was gonna go to the park and he was gonna think that he lost his daughter and then find her. Those beats, sorry for spoilers, those beats were always gonna be this
thing, that right? Park thing was like, oh.
Well, because I wanted to mimic the first issue, and I wanted to go with the idea of like he, because Callista says it. Callista's like, "You're always gonna be the lost boy, like you're never gonna find your family, right? That's the whole thing. You're never gonna find your family." And then he finds her at the end, and it's like he defeats this thing, because part of the whole idea of the book is about, you know, destiny and getting to pick your life and having control of your life, all this stuff. And Callista, who you know, she controls her own life her own way. And she tells him, like, you're never going to be anything other than that lost little boy running in the woods looking for his family. That is what she tells him. You're never going to be anything else other than that. And he breaks that finally.
She sort of curses him with it in a way. Like, it felt like, it feels like in the issue, you could see him be like, ah, God, she's right. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he breaks it. Like, and that's the whole nature of it. So. Like I said, those things were the scenes with Callista, they were drastically different. Like, they were drastically different from before, where it was much more of a fight. It was like a drag out fight. And then I was going through it and some stuff with me, and it became this thing of like, it isn't about the fight anymore. And her having some kind of peace with herself and him having peace with her, because she was this thing that haunted him. And so for me, like, cathartically, she represented a lot of stuff from my past and a lot of stuff of frustration about a past. And that's the whole, like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff they talk about in there, but a lot of that was me talking to my past in a lot of ways, right? And
so that's awesome.
It came to a lot of weird conclusions about this book, and it changed that last issue because of it, of me being able to kind of, like, emotionally deal with parts of my life that I was unhappy with from before and being able to finally say, like, him kind of being, like, him sort of like making the decision of like, I'm no longer afraid of you and this thing between us is done. That was also me like learning that lesson and letting go of a lot of stuff and being like, it's time to move forward. So all these things, but even something as simple as like originally at the ending, when Mikey, you know, finds his family, it was gonna be just him and his daughter. Like, Raya wasn't going to be there. And then as I started getting closer and closer, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm a fool. Of course she's going to be there. Also, things like that changed. But that was because of maybe I've grown as a person and then thought about stuff, you know. And so, like, there's all kinds of things throughout the book that definitely influenced me figuring some things out. And I became a better writer, too, just working on this book. It's always been the hardest one to write. And so, you know, just I think me figuring some things out and, you know, becoming a father definitely influenced some of my thoughts on the book and, you know, the relationships between the families and stuff and between, you know, with Aaron and Wendy, you know, all the things with them, just it all kind of like it. Yeah, it definitely went back and forth where I was figuring out stuff and then I would put it in the book. And then I would be like reading it and being like, oh man, you know what? Like it would make me realize, like writing it, like I would realize something and come back to it. Wow. There's this thing that some writers talk about where you're like, you're on the couch too much when you're writing. And I don't necessarily think that's a problem.
Like, I don't think couch is nice.
Yeah, I don't think there's nothing wrong treating, well, because it's about therapy, right? Like you're on the couch at your therapist.
Yeah.
A lot of writing is therapy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but it is me putting a lot of stuff into the work and then trying to, you know, feed it backwards. So that's what this book was. It was always that.
Yeah. You're a method writer. Are you going to tell your family that you had them because you needed to know what it was like for the book?
No.
You don't have to answer that question. I do have one more question, though. I love the way, now that you sort of set up the ending for us, like the way, I feel like there's such a temptation in comics and all media now to be like, guess what? It's happening again. And the satisfaction that we get at the end of this book when it's like, no, it's not. Like, I felt like that tension, just reading this book now in our current sort of culture, creative culture, like, I felt like the tension couldn't be higher. And then when they find each other, I thought that, like, that release was just really, really nice.
Well, I thought we had it in, too. There was nothing else to be said after that.
Yeah.
It was fun. I remember talking to people when issue one came out. There's a friend of mine. His name is Ben Abernathy. He's the Batman group editor at DC. And when he came, when the first issue came out, he said he had a hard time reading it because the beginning felt too much for him, right? It was too much for a father to, like, not find their kids in the woods, you know, and then to lose them and the family drama after that. He was like, oh, it felt too real to him. And it, in the back of my head, I'm like, knowing how that was the ending, I was like, all right, good. I'm glad I got that part right. I got it right on the very beginning because that's the whole ending. It's about bringing it back around and then, yeah, closing it off. I wanted to close the door. You know, we have a coda that's in Skybound X. Do you know what Skybound X is? It's this weekly thing that Skybound's doing in July, where it's, I think it's July. It's like 5 issues weekly where everything is just little shorts, anthologies, where it's going to be about, like, The Walking Dead will have a chapter, and then there's going to be a chapter for Excellence. Just different Skybound books, like Invincible has, I think, something in there. But there's this, there, so one of them is going to have a Birthright one, and it's kind of a coda, but not really. It's a kind of a fun thing about Brennan. Like, Brennan figures out there's one place in Terranos that Mikey never went to, and he wants to know why. And so he goes, and he meets somebody who, I'm going to say it's not really weird, he meets someone that I wrote a lot of who has never appeared in a Birthright comic book before.
Whoa. So,
thing where he meets somebody and is like, oh, what are you doing here? It's like a whole thing, and it's just a fun little story, but it gives you, like, even a little bit more of a coda for Brennan. But even then, I'm definitely done with this world. Like, I feel like, the arc of Mikey was the, you know, him finding his family again. Because that was it. It was the whole thing. The beginning of the book was like, this has been taken away from him. You know, from him and his family. They're never going to be a real family again. All this stuff got taken away. And of building that back and then giving it back to him at the ending of like, no, you, not only do you find them, they find you. And yeah, it was always about coming back around to that idea.
Wow. That's great.
We have a question over on YouTube, if you guys can hear me. I don't even know. Ramsey Hassan says, were there any surprise moments or... Yes. Ramsey Hassan says, were there any surprise moments or turns in the story that came out in the scripting?
Yeah, the biggest one is probably Boomer. Like, Boomer was the military guy who became the werewolf who, like, is basically kind of like an uncle in the family. That dude was never in any plans ever. That guy was never in any initial plans. That guy came out of, we were like, oh, the military is going to be coming after them at some point, like piecing stuff together. I was like, oh, they're on this train. We knew the military was coming after them. And I don't even remember what the line was now. I'm like forgetting. It was like, it was all aboard. That's right. It was all aboard. So it sounded really silly, but like the end of one of the issues, I had to write a military person spying on the family. And he sees them on the train. And the moment I wrote, like, he was going to write something else. It was going to be more, like, menacing or whatever. But the moment I did, like, a page turn reveal of this guy looking at the train, and he says, all aboard, suddenly that character like unlocked in my head, and I was like, oh, I like this guy. And so I started writing on the next issue where he was the villain for that arc because he was hunting them. And I started writing this character, and then I was like, yeah, I actually really like I like this dude. And then gradually he became part of the story and more of the book. He actually took the place of another character whose name was Agent Brooks from the very beginning that I always thought was a little boring. Like, it was my fault. I kind of made him boring. But he didn't necessarily... Well, because at one point, Agent Brooks, this goes in the idea of something changing. At one point, Agent Brooks was, we were going to hint at the fact that he had an affair with Wendy or something happened with Wendy. We kind of hinted at it, but I never really liked it. And so we kind of abandoned it. And then once we abandoned that, he became less and less interesting. And so once he met Boomer and Boomer kind of took on his role, you know, of like, I'm the military guy here. I'm the guy working for the government. Then Boomer started becoming more and more interesting to me to write. And then I was having dinner with Andre in New York. And Andre was like, you know what? We were having this whole conversation, but what do you want to draw? Like, what do you want to draw in the book? And he was like, I really want to draw werewolves. I really want to draw werewolves. And I was like, well, we're going to have this issue where they're going to fight a bunch of monsters that have guns. So one of my favorite gags in the book is where they all train with swords, thinking they're going to fight monster swords, and they show up and monsters have guns. They go, and one of the monsters was going to be a werewolf. And then I was like, oh, man, he's going to bite Boomer. And then we're going to turn Boomer into a werewolf. And that made Andre so happy. So it just kind of like... definitely like kind of weaved his way through, and Andre always loved drawing him, and especially when he was like, once he became like half human, half werewolf in issue 49, I could tell Andre was just like really having fun with that character. So that's one of the biggest like weird kind of changes that came through, but a lot of the other stuff was sort of mapped out as we went. There were occasionally little things. I only ran out of room once for something in the whole thing. I had to kind of like correct a little bit. Some of the stuff was Oshana, who was supposed to be, you know, Mikey's wife on the other world, that he wasn't, like, they were in arranged marriage stuff. Some of the stuff got shifted around a little bit, but for the most part, all the big beats of like what we knew each arc was going to be stayed the same. But yeah, that character Boomer came out of nowhere, but I loved writing him, and he even getting. All that we did, the last five issues are all epilogues, basically. It's like we do an epilogue for Brennan and Mikey and their relationship. We do Araya, you know. And then Boomer got his own epilogue issue because of that. Like, that character did not exist, became important enough that we gave him his own issue. So, yeah.
One of the things that I really loved was a lot of the action stuff, and there was some amazing double page spreads there that really made me want to, you know, have the physical copy of the book. Were there pages that you got back that you were just kind of like really blown away with, that kind of like stick with you of like, oh my God, I'm so happy with how this turned out, or so moved by it?
Yeah, I would say almost every issue. It became a matter of like challenging each other, I think, because with Andre, I would give him something early on, you know, like early on in the book, I would pitch something in the book or ask him to draw some two-page spread, and I would be like, here's this crazy thing, and then he would come back and he would do it like way better than I was expecting. So I'm like, all right, I know this guy, I know what he's gonna do. And everything was always, he was always gonna take on every challenge I put in front of him. So then it became this matter of me trying to one-up him and then him trying to one-up me. So it was just like me constantly being like, bro, you can draw that? Well, here's this other crazy thing to draw. Let's see what happens. And then he would always go, like, above and beyond every single time. So, yeah, there were times that would come in, and I was just like, dude. I think one in particular comes to mind was the first time. I mean, every time he drew anything, you're just like, dude, this guy gets it. But there was even stuff, like, with the there's a two-page spread where they go into, like, their grandpa, Samuel's their grandpa. They go into his lair, and it's this two-page spread of a collection of all these artifacts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in the script, I literally just wrote artifacts. Andre went and he just like looked up, you know, like every single fantasy movie possible, and grabbed one thing from each and put it in that room, to the point where Skybound had to make Skybound made an index for everything. Mm. And even after they made an index, I think it's in the back of one of the trades, they show the index, they show the art, and they show all the stuff he put into it. There was even something recently I was looking at, and I found something that wasn't in the index. And I was like, dude, he just slammed it, so much stuff in there all the time. And yeah, that's why he and I, like, I had plans on working with that dude pretty much forever. Like, we have another book that we're like, I owe him some stuff, so he's starting to do designs for it. But, like, he and I have this other thing we want to do now that we're done with this. It'll be shorter. It won't be 50 issues. But we have this thing we want to do next that's it's not a fantasy thing. It's very different from this. But I don't know. Part of that is because I talked to him on Skype when I started. I was like, he has to draw it. And I went to him, and I'm like, all right, you think this stuff before was crazy? This stuff's even more crazy. Like, let's see if you can draw this stuff. So yeah, it'll be fun working with him. Yeah, he does all kinds of, yeah, he'll always go for it every single time. That's
amazing. Just to Justin, you look like you were about to
go ahead. Go ahead. I was going to place a drink. I was going to make a drink order with you. Is that
thanks?
It seems like you're mixed.
Yeah, if you want any of that,
great.
You obviously, like you're saying, you're done with the world of Birthright, even though you have this coda coming. But do you have any plans to work with Andre again in the future?
Well, that's what I was saying.
Or do you want to break from each other at this point?
No,
he was just talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I want to do it, but we're working on a book now. He's starting to design school next week, actually. So, yeah, we're talking about a book that we want to do. There's a book we want to do next, or that we're gonna do next. It's very different from Birthright. I think people will be surprised. It's gonna be pretty different.
Now that you have every issue out, is there any chance that we're going to get like an omnibus or anything like that?
We talk about it all the time. I have a couple different options we want to do. I'll show you something. Part of it is that we want to do it right. In the French editions for Birthright, they do like giant hardcovers. Let me show you this thing.
Cool. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind just going through everything on your shelf, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, let's see the international spread.
Yeah, no, but look at this thing. So this is the size of the hardcover.
Wow.
The comic book comparatively. Like, if you look at maybe, like, what's a hardcover? Okay, so, like, I have, like, the Image Paper Girls hardcover. Like,
nice!
This is
That's a flex. That's a French flex right there. the French know how to do it up.
Yeah, so they do these hardcovers like this. And so I've always told Skybound, I'm always like, if we ever do hardcovers, I want them to be this size. Yeah. This is, I think it would look, dude, they look so cool. They just look awesome. So we do talk about stuff. It depends on a few things. We do have a plan for something that's like a big collectible thing. It's way too early to talk about it. But then you also have the fact that, you know, Universal has been working on a movie for the last few years, and we've gotten some like cool news about that, and it keeps on running. So I think if that movie does happen and does really start hitting it, then that'll be even easier for us to get like really nice hardcovers.
Yeah, that's when the books get much, much larger. When you get that movie hype is when the books are, you're sleeping on a book at night.
Well, it'll be nice because we'll have 10 trades. And so if you look at, this is very much more mercenary money-minded, but you look at like the Invincible cartoon is on Amazon right now.
Yeah.
And the Invincible compendiums, they're selling like crazy. So, you know, you never know. We'll see what happens. But we definitely want to, there is a plan to do some kind of really nice collectible thing down the line. We talk about it. And it's just a matter of time.
Do you have a dream casting for Mikey, and why is it Jason Momoa?
I feel like it's always been Jason Momoa, even from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's something we always talk about is Jason Momoa, but I don't know. We'll see. I think it'd be awesome with Jason Momoa. I mean, he's so iconic as Aquaman now, though, too. So I don't know. We'll see.
He can move away from Aquaman. Everyone's fine with
I mean, everybody's with else. Yeah, I know. But
don't put that out there. Don't say that.
I think that Andre, because Andre actually came to that conclusion on his own before I said it. And he didn't really draw him as much as that, but it's definitely been on our minds this whole time that, you know, very much like a Jason Momoa would be perfect. I'm not sure also, I'm sure there's like other actors who can grow a beard and long hair and be super buff, but Jason Momoa has a good personality, you know? He has a really good energy to work here, so.
Yeah. And are you going to try to get yourself like a little camera, a cameo in it and stuff like that, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, for sure. I would totally say that. Yeah, why not? Yeah, why not?
All that stuff. It's easy. They love putting the writers in acting roles.
Yeah. By the way, not to call him out, but when you said actors growing beards, Pete immediately went, So we'll see.
Beard grew a little bit when you said that. It's an option. I'm going to do push-ups for the rest of the interview.
Yeah, there actually is a Mikey toy that Skybound made. That's like, it's like a little guy. It's like a little Funko size one. And I don't have that. So whenever we talk about something, I'm always like, oh my God, where is that? It's so crazy. But actually, I'll show you. Pretty cool. Where is that? What did I do with it?
I love this. I love the shelf dive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. This shelf, it's surrounding you, John.
Oh, yeah. Really. It goes all the way around. It goes all
I love
around.
It. You have wow. ultimate access to everything.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's look at awesome. That.
When you said Funko, that's not what that is.
This is something else. There are only 5 of these in the world.
Wow. But
it is a Mikey statue that Andre had made when we, I think it was like year 2 of the book. Andre had these made. He sculpted it. And somebody made it's bronze. It's a bronze statue. There are only 5 of these. So it's like me, Sean, Andre has one. I think it's Kirkman, and I forget who has the 5th one. But yeah, there are 5 of these in the world of this guy. And it's awesome. It's like one of my favorite things. I got this in one of the most nervous trips I've ever had coming home from a convention.
I bet.
Was this.
I bet. Packed in a suitcase?
It was in my luggage. Yeah, I think it was 2015. It was in my luggage, and they actually checked it. They went through it, and they didn't break it. Yeah, this could easily break. It's got this like mace on it, and it has this axe. This could easily break one day. So I keep it in a very nice, secure location. But yeah, that's like one of my most. That's probably one of my most prized birthright things. Is that it's.
I just have this picture in my head of you standing up and saying, yeah, I'm really scared about it breaking one day. And then you sit down and it just goes, pew.
Oh, no.
That's why it's in a different location where I can never, bump it. Like, all this other stuff are toys. Anything that's right around here are usually toys because if I just bump into it, it's not that big a deal. I broke a Hawkman toy over here recently. Oh, he fell. His base broke. So, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, but congratulations about the book. It's amazing. We love it. Justin is getting set up on his bed like a little schoolgirl kicking up.
I'm just going to sit here. No, my computer was at 1%. It wasn't charging. I had to move.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Congratulations. It has been a pleasure talking about this book.
It's been amazing.
Over the decades.
Amazing.
Years. Congratulations. And everybody go check it out tomorrow from Image Comics. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks. Take care.
So great.
All right, there we go. Once again, Birthright from Image Comics. It is out tomorrow on stands everywhere, Birthright number 50. Did I freeze again? What's going on?
No, I'm just laughing at Justin trying to, like...
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to invite our next guests in.
Yeah, let's hope they do get invited in before you get frozen.
But if they do get to go in here, or even regardless, we'll just plug it anyway. Oh, there they are. Michael W. Conrad and Becky Clinton. Hello.
Can you hear
us? So excited.
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes.
We can.
We did it.
We nailed it. We're super excited. We brought our Mikey statue as well.
Amazing.
That's great. Thank you so much for having us. Wow.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you so much for coming on. So you guys are working on the new run of Wonder Woman that we have been loving.
Yes,
it's so fantastic.
Oh, great.
And for those who haven't been picking...
Have you read the newest one?
Yes, we have.
I don't know.
Yeah.
People are kind of eased on
he
that
reads
one.
The reviews.
I read the reviews.
Oh,
I see,
wow.
I see
read them out. Quick.
Torture myself. Oh, midnight the night before I started.
Don't do it.
From what I understand, Tom King does the same thing, so I'm just going to keep doing it. If I end up doing the Tom's numbers, then I think we'll be all right. We're very happy with how people are responding to our run, and it's cool, man.
Well, for those who haven't been picking it up, there's such a simple little switch that you do here where, and I'm sure you guys can talk about the plot more, but the basic idea is that Wonder Woman wakes up with no memory, not in Olympus, but in Asgard, and she's caught in this Valhalla fight with the Norse mythological creations. And obviously there's a lot more to it, but it's such this little shift of mythologies, but it makes such a big difference for the storytelling. Where did that initial germ of the idea come from? Where did you say, wait a second, we're not going to have her die and end up in Olympus in that afterlife. We're going to put her in this other mythological afterlife.
I think that it was just we wanted to do something different, something that wasn't expected. When we were presented with the opportunity to write Wonder Woman, we knew that, you know, it was coming out on the tail end of death metal and that you know, she has ascended, she's sacrificed herself for the multiverse. And Becky and I, as with every part of our creative process, it starts with us going for a long walk and having a conversation. Aww. And I don't know who came up with it, but we just thought that it would be like, imagine you died and went to the wrong afterlife. Like how bizarre, like my man in that cool song once said.
That's the soundtrack I play when I read every issue. I'm so glad to hear that was the right choice.
Yeah, it's like, good tune.
Yeah. I think some of it too was, it was just kind of a breath of fresh air to, cause you know, Diana is so always surrounded by like Greek mythology, and that mythos is so familiar to her. And like, almost, I don't want to say it's overdone because it's, you know, it's what you expect. But it was just fun to throw her someplace totally new. And
I mean, I got to say, reading, especially reading the issue that came out yesterday, which I thought was great. So I don't know whose reviews you're reading, because we're about to drop a crush review tomorrow morning.
There we go. We need all of them. We need all that we can get. Make up fake names. Go on the internet.
One with mustache, no mustache. It's going to be a whole elaborate buffet of reviews. But I want to see, this is the Wonder Woman I want to see. I want to see this like Quantum Leap version where she bounces around to different places doing afterlife things or just touching other parts of the world. I feel like we've seen just so much of the Mount Olympus game.
Yeah, I agree. It really came off as like a fresh kind of, and also she's different. She looks different, which is great. It's a, I really, as someone who loves Wonder Woman, loves a lot of the runs, I really thought this was such a big swing in all the right ways. And I can't wait for more. I'm very excited. Can you talk a little bit about like, with the character design and different kind of things that you were like this is important to me for this Wonder Woman character?
Yeah, we let Travis do a lot of that. I think when we started, we sent him like a bunch of reference and like ideas and like kind of jumping off points. And the idea is to kind of straddle something that's mythological, something that is historically, I don't say accurate, but like historically, like you could look at it and recognize what it is. And then the superhero stuff. So, you know, you never want to lose sight of the fact that it's a superhero book. So you want it to have that flavor, but you don't want it to be like the dominant thing in the design. So he really just worked his magic and came up with something absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, a lot of it is like, we didn't create Thor from whole cloth for the DCU. He actually...
That's a Kirby.
Yeah, it's a Kirby thing. So it's like, oh, this guy named Kirby has made it a time. Like, we can...
Maybe
we could use that.
Well, when I saw the hammer, I was like, that hammer is not fresh. That's not a fresh hammer right there.
So, like Becky was saying, we wanted to have a couple different ingredients in there. And thankfully, Travis is just such a brilliant artist that he was able to make something feel germane to the area while also feeling like fun and exciting to look at. Because frankly, in doing our research, a lot of these old Norse clothing pieces, they didn't look that great. These were just people who were like,
they've disintegrated over time.
Can't even see them nowadays.
Clothes used to be much harder than they are now.
Clothes used to suck. I mean, that's be real.
Yeah, feet, like shoes, you'd have the same shoe for both feet. And then when they kind of worn out, you switched them.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I mean, I still do that. I like that. I think that's a good way to make use. Exactly.
I had clubbed feet when I was young, so I had to wear my shoes on the wrong feet to adjust the curvature of my feet. And that's not a joke. No. So let's not make jokes about my shoe, about my footwear.
No one would. I should have said, I saw that was a do not talk about.
I immediately got hot. Believe it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
One other thing that you guys have put in this run, and especially this issue, is Diana has like relationships and like more real, like she has a hookup. She has like a romance. And I feel like that's something that's missing from just so many comics. There's always like all the characters, I feel like they're frozen in their like relationships in not just sexual relationships, but all relationships. So to actually see that, I thought was like, yes, it's so nice to see that. Was that like something you were consciously doing, or did it develop as you were doing it?
That was something that just kind of came out of the fact that we just loved Siggy so much, I think.
Aww.
Yeah.
Like we, you know, when we first were thinking of different characters that would act as like foils for her and yeah. different people who would, you know, populate the area. It just kind of felt natural, I guess.
Yeah. Sometimes like Josh was saying in the course of telling a story, it's almost like a character speaks to you and demands, you know, more time, more like a greater presence within the story. I would have never planned something like that. I think like we were already asking so much. It's like, hey, here's the memory trope and here's a furry sidekick. We're doing all these things wrong. Like I'm so thankful that people are responding well to it because we've done all the things that I kind of hate. But I think we're doing it from the most genuine place that we can as real fans of Diana and fans of 80 years of her stories. We never would have planned to have something like that happen. But we have made efforts to kind of evolve Diana a little bit. And that's kind of where some of the critique of our run is coming from. People are concerned about the colloquial nature of her speech, about this, you know, this budding situation with Siegfried. There's people who have like a very clear, defined idea of who Diana is, and we want to respect them and we want to honor them in their fandom. But on the same hand, we're trying to move the character forward a little bit. So it's cool that people are kind of picking up what we're putting down. Hopefully we, you know, we can thread that needle and keep new and old fans happy.
I appreciate you guys saying that, but I feel like you said, we've had 80 years of that. Like, let's make some moves, gang. These characters can be a little bit different.
That's what we say when we are on Comic Book Club. That's yes. what we say when we're in our home. We're like, let's do something. Let's do this. But no, would we plan it? Heck no.
I think it helps too that we started in like the afterlife. It's like a weird time for her. She is like, right. you know, rediscovering who she is, and hopefully like readers, you know, it's a great point for people to jump on to.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
if you haven't read Wonder Woman before, like it's a great point to like get to know her as well.
This is a question from over on YouTube. With Asgard having such a strong tie to Marvel and the public consciousness, how did you go about making it your own? Or maybe the answer is because it's partially Kirby, maybe that at least gave that starting point there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a consideration. We got a cat joining us now.
Yeah.
Scratching my leg.
That's where you got the idea for the furry sidekick right there. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Feels real.
I think, I mean, it's kind of everyone's property, you know. Mythology becomes the property of humanity. We all share ownership over it. With regard to differentiating it from Marvel, we didn't have to work too hard at that because we both grew up being mythology fans. So we just based it more on the mythology. We based it on that and kind of leaning into those old Kirby designs that are kind of hard to find, and it didn't really define the world too much. So it's really mostly let's dig in with the mythology and let's see like what do the myths tell us about the layout of this land. We created a couple elements there, and like we describe Yggdrasil, which is like the big world tree there, as being a member of the Parliament of Trees. That's just, you know, us being nerds and wanting to do a little nod to Swamp Thing, like nice. In the Year of the Gods.
And then who knows where that will pay off later. You know, it's like you see these little ideas that you can like pull, you know, in the future, you know, we could look back and find all these little breadcrumb trails that we can start like, you know, picking away at.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully someone else somewhere down the line is like, oh yeah, there was this weird Wonder Woman moment. Like, let's go back to that world. Let's see. see what's going on there.
I mean, a lot of Swamp Thing writers are like, okay, trees. Okay, where's some more trees? You know, giving tree. Nope, yeah. That's a stump. Okay, I don't know. Spoiler for Giving Tree also.
Yeah, geez, come on, man.
A stump? I had actually totally forgotten that that's the ending, and you just broke my heart again.
Yeah, I mean, all over again. Just,
that's
so
the good story. You stumped. That's a giving tree right there.
I know I'm a ghost once again, but I'll talk from my cloudy visage over here. You guys are also working on a Midnighter backup, yes. Right? Which is great, yes. As well. Love Michael Avon Oeming's art. Super fun to have him on board for that. What's your take on Midnighter? Like, how do you come at that character? Because that feels like such a tough nut to crack.
I was trying to give Becky space to speak because I'm such a talker.
I was waiting for him to speak because he's such a talker.
You guys froze in like a family photo almost.
I think like what everyone knows about Midnighter who hasn't kept up with the character since 98 or whenever he first debuted on the scene in the Authority is like, oh, it's a gay Batman. And I always saw that as kind of like, it's almost insulting how much it strips the character down and takes away all the nuance that I find most interesting about Midnighter. The stuff that I find interesting about Midnighter does involve his sexuality, does involve his vigilante status. But the thing that I find most interesting about him as somebody who with a background in the mental health field is his apparent lack of empathy and his seeming glee at causing harm to bad guys. I've always found it problematic and strange and weird, but also, you know, in a story, it's exciting because there aren't real consequences from this. I've always been interested in trying to find a way to kind of reconcile and get in the head of Midnighter. And that's exactly what we decided to do when we took the Midnighter assignment was let's get in his head literally and figure out maybe a little piece of why he is this way. We're telling it in the framework of like a, almost like a Verhoeven movie, like just over the top, sci-fi, violent, weird, as violent and weird as we can get away with in the pages comics. Of Action Comics, which is like more for the family thing. We drove our editors so wild, so we were pushing the limits so much that Jamie S. Rich has left DC Comics. As a result, he couldn't deal with
it. Broke someone.
We broke him. He left. Wow. No, Jamie was a huge advocate, and the reason why we ended up on that book. Jamie did leave DC, but he's off to pursue a new job.
He got
a new
offer.
Job.
He couldn't refuse.
An offer he couldn't refuse. So meanwhile, we're like continuing to explore Midnighter, but in this modality of also doing the things that we love seeing Midnighter do, the stuff that I loved seeing him do in Steve Orlando's run,
yeah. Which was
beating people with a hammer and having like sweet, tender, very real moments with Apollo. So we're getting to those parts.
Yeah, because for me, he's nothing like Batman because he's capable of love. But the fact that he is like compartmentalized, like I'm at work, I beat ass, you know, and then when I get home, I can hang that up. But like, I really love the duality of Midnighter as someone who can show how tender and capable he is and then also be so broken. And I really love the art style really kind of like sets up this world of like, this is a different Midnighter. We're really kind of diving into him and it's kind of warping him in a way that the art does that I really think opens up the story in such a great way. As a Midnighter fan, I've been really happy with what you guys have been doing. So again, I just want as a nerd, just say, thank you. You're killing it. And thank you so much.
It's a great, just to jump on that real quick, it's a great package with Philip Kennedy Johnson's Action Comics Superman stuff.
It's yeah.
Like, this emotionally tense thing, like, I care for my father. I feel like he's going to get hurt. Yeah. And then you pop to Midnighter, he's like, well, my brain is this. It's like wild. Like, I just got to get through another day. Like, it really is a great package. And let's get that Midnighter book on the shelves standalone.
Yeah, I think
that would
be really cool. We're actually today we were working on the annual that will be out. I don't know. I never know the release dates on things, but it'll be significant, and it's an opportunity for us to really kind of tie up all the different weird little loose ends that we've got.
It's an annual on its own too, so we're not beholden to the Action Comics rules, so we can go a little wild with this, which is very exciting.
And then somebody named Grant Morrison is gonna stake claim over Midnighter for a little bit, but
wow, must be a new person. Haven't heard of him.
Concerning.
When this person is unable to bear that weight anymore, we'll be there. We'll be there.
We'll be waiting.
You'll be there to carry him. You will be the ring bearer.
We do have a very nice comment I wanted to read from over on YouTube. Comic Pop says, no question, just saying this Wonder Woman run is spectacular, status quo, and a blast every issue, which is very nice. And although this is more than enough, and it's wonderful. Wonder Woman, Midnighter, is there anything else you're working on? Anything else you want to plug that's coming up potentially?
Yeah, there's stuff that we're doing for DC right now that we aren't allowed to bring up.
Okay.
But it'll be announced at some point.
Very, very soon.
Good.
It'll be one of those things where I don't know that people will expect us to be the people to be working on this project, but I think we're trying to show that we can write a variety of different things. So that's kind of a tease, but I mean, all that we've got is like stuff that we can't talk about. I've got a graphic novel coming out this month. I don't even know the release date, and it's a secret. They should tell you. It's a secret even for me.
Wow.
So it's strange. Next week, I've got a story in Superman Red and Blue with art by Kelly Hamner. It's a bizarro story, which, you know, people who are familiar with me as a person, it kind of makes sense for me to be working on such a thing. Becky's got something in Wonder Woman
Black and Gold.
Oh, nice.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, those are fun.
Cool. Well, that's very cool. That is a lot of stuff coming up.
For fans of Becky's art, Becky drew that one as well. So.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Great news. Yeah. That's awesome.
She can draw pretty well.
She's pretty good. It takes me a long time.
Take your time. We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Cool. We're cool. Okay. You're busy doing a lot, so it's great.
I have a bunch of short stories that I'm working on too, but nothing like, I mean, it's just original stuff right now, so on the side.
Yeah,
original stuff is good too. We want to read it.
Yeah, if you weren't familiar with Becky's original stuff, go over to the comic shop and look for By Chance or Providence. It's available from Image Comics. It's some of the most breathtaking stuff you're ever going to see. I love it. I'm a big fan.
That's nice.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure. Yeah. We are big fans of Wonder Woman, Midnighter, and everything else you're working on. So congratulations on all of that, and have a lovely
night. Thank you so much.
See you guys. Thanks, have a good one. Thanks for coming through.
Aw, those right. two.
There we go. Very. Once again, Michael W. Great. Conrad and Becky Cloonan. Wonder Woman, new issue on Stats tomorrow. You can also check out Midnighter and Action Comics. And real quick before we move on, Pete, I made something for you. I just wanted to show off here.
Oh, yeah, I'm at work.
There we go. It's not really showing up. I'm at work. I beat ass. There we go. I'll print that out for you and send it to your
office.
Thank
you. Yeah,
please. Wow, Alex, when you're on delay, you get a lot of other shit done. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I also I'm doing stuff.
Cool, man.
I'm not, it doesn't look like I'm here, but
I tell you, you have nothing to prove, Alex. You don't.
I just can't imagine if you were.
I'm a part of the show. I'm an important part of the show.
You are. You're not losing your spot.
Okay. All right. Don't kick me out.
I just want to go back to something they were talking about real quick. Like, they go on walks and kind of like discuss comic books and like pitch ideas to each other. That would be an amazing, like, you know, like things overheard, like just hearing them kind of go back and forth on pitching ideas would be unbelievable. Okay. Just to kind of be able to.
I agree, Pete. We should go on walks. Just think of the shit we would say.
Oh, man. Just crazy.
Well, I want to hear the shit everybody else is going to say, because we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, we will answer absolutely anything that is on your mind. Just drop a question either and ask a question or in the comments over on YouTube and we'll answer them. You know, we already went over this a little bit while people are getting questions in. I am now drinking a little dark rum in this glass, seeing how that tastes. With the
just a glass of dark rum?
That's bold. That's bold.
What are you, sailor who's been at sea for several months?
I have this, I literally, Gosling's, I'll drink that straight. It's so great. Good.
It's very good.
Wow. That's cool.
It's good stuff. But I'm the limes drinking and the mint and the sugar and vodka. Everything are left over there.
No, Pete.
No, it's vodka and soda.
Justin, how are you killing yourself today?
Well, I'm in very hot room. And like I said, I'm drinking this keg beer they have
downstairs. Yeah, but what beer? What's the beer?
It's a pale ale that they make here. This Airbnb is on a farm. And so
they make their own beer?
They make their own beer, and you can also drink it. There in the morning, we get eggs from the farm. We feed the goats.
And that's all you can drink beer?
Yeah, dude. It's lit.
What?
I know. It's
fun. How
are
you not slurring your words?
Why don't...
Family.
Why don't we go for some questions? This is from Pablo over on Crowdcast. What do you guys think of Rob Zombie doing a movie based on the Munsters? And I don't know if this is real news or something that Pablo is pitching us on. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, it would be an interesting take on the Munsters, that's for sure. It would definitely be more horrific. You know, I don't know. Why not?
Sure.
Do anything. I wonder what Rob Zombie's... Why is he after the Munsters? Is he trying to lighten it up, do some fun, have some comedy?
I mean, there is some comedy to his horror movies.
Not a ton, but they're little moments. I don't know
it's
if you remember the Munsters.
In terms of like, hey, did you see that clown rip up that person? That's pretty funny.
Joke. Yeah. The Munsters barely ever murdered a family member.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
The Stairs ate a lot of people, but other than that, you know.
Yeah. Mm. It was like a fun murder.
This is from Nelson over on YouTube. Out of the few pieces of news that dropped today, which are you guys most excited about? Ep titles for Umbrella Academy Season 3, Lock and Key Season 2, or the sneak peek of Sandman? So this is the portion of the show where we fill Pete in on some news that happened probably. but Netflix is doing their Geeked Week this week where they're talking about a bunch of geek stuff.
That's very close to our Week in Geek section.
I've
got to get our lawyers on that.
Millions of dollars. Millions. I'm going to take them down.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I have Crackle power.
Our lawyer is first-hand up guy in the comment.
Yeah. So they mentioned Steve Blackman, the showrunner of Umbrella Academy, read off the episode titles for Umbrella Academy Season 3. There's going to be 10 episodes there. The big one, I think, for comic book fans, the last episode of Season 3 is titled Oblivion, which, of course, teases Hotel Oblivion, the miniseries by Gerard Way. So that sounds super fun. I'm excited to check that out. The Lock and Key Season 2. Lock and Key Season 2 is coming out in October, and they showed us some first look images there. Not a whole ton, but we did see Kinsey walking on water by a swan boat, which I thought was very fun. And I'm just psyched that show's coming back. And then the last one...
It's great to have it on the sked.
Yeah. I don't know if you check this out, but there was a behind-the-scenes reel of Sandman with Neil Gaiman walking around the set of Sandman. How'd you feel about that?
Yeah, touching stuff, interacting with it. What'd you think, Justin?
The whole Sandman, there was like some Twitter controversy that Neil Gaiman was actually like responding to, which I was like, get out of that mess. I don't know. There's too much light on this. I just want it to come out and just watch it. I can't have all this bad shit surrounding it. Yeah.
Well, it was nice to see the actors kind of geeking out about Sandman. That made me very excited that like, everybody is very familiar with the work and how important this was as far as like something that really changed the game. So I'm all those things lined up for me. So I'm very excited about the series. And it was cool just to kind of see him kind of walking around and touching stuff.
Yeah, he just needs to get out there and touch stuff. Someone should be following him every day, just like touching bags of flour at the grocery store.
Over the course of a day, that would be amazing. Yeah. I'm sort of with you, Justin, maybe even a little stronger, where the cast is amazing, and it looked great from the sets, but there's a certain sense that I feel like Neil Gaiman is a little too involved in this, in a similar way when I feel Stephen King is too involved in a project, where, man, I love both of them as writers. Like, their stuff sort of evens out when they're too involved in it, it feels like to me. You know what I mean? Where it's like, they don't have somebody else giving it the sharp edges it needs.
Oh, are you talking about the Stephen King project that he is, like, wildly talking about that's coming out? What's that called?
Lizzie's Story? Yeah.
Is that why
why are you mad at someone who's, like, being hands-on with their own project? Like, what...
No, sometimes it works. I just don't have a sense necessarily that it works all the time with Neil Gaiman. Oh. Like, I think he needs somebody else to process his stuff and bring out the things when it's working for TV. But I got to watch it, of course. We're probably going to do a podcast.
He's really good at his job. So
Sandcast. Enter Sandman. Yeah.
You got it.
Enter podcast.
Enter Sandfan. Enter podcast. That's really good. That's really smart.
You know what? We have a little time to work on it. We'll figure it out.
Okay, cool.
We got a bunch of questions.
I think enter podcast is pretty good.
Yes. This is from Michael T. over on Crowdcast. If you could write yourself a cameo on an MCU a la...
I froze. It was tough. We didn't get the full question.
You don't have to say it every time he does it.
Well, you know, so the audio people listening know what's up.
I got it. If you could, we'll fix that in post. If you could write yourself a cameo in the MCU a la Stan Lee, what would it be? What do you think? So this is a la Stan Lee means you're just any asshole in any scene, just being like, hey, would you look at that?
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny to see Stan Lee driving a truck trying to pull the hammer out of the ground. You know what I mean? Because that's... It's like you don't expect them there, you know? So, but I don't know. I mean, as we were in Lock and Key, like being split in half with a double-sided black axe is kind of, you know, that's unbelievable. I would love to, maybe get shot. And well, people don't really die so much or get shot, but like,
you want to get
shot. Oh yeah, it's great. That's fun. You want to, then you get to do the makeup where there's like a bullet hole in your head or maybe a couple, you know, that's fun stuff.
So you want to be shot, and you don't care by who or where.
No,
you haven't said any Marvel Universe project. You're just like, I just want to be shot at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a strong, strong answer.
Hey,
I guess
you could do that in real life, man.
Yeah, it's a good call. I'm going to say Silver Surfer's surfboard.
Oh, surfboard. All right.
Silver me up and I'll lay very rigidly.
I know you're a great actor, but I don't know if I believe you as a surfboard right now.
Look. It's perfect.
Yeah, but I didn't believe you were a surfboard.
I'm not.
You look
vertical.
More like an ironing board. You were more like an ironing board there.
Don't you dare. Yeah, don't you dare. Oh, you know the story. This baby Silver Surfer sort of like in a Vision style, the comic Vision, where he's just chilling in suburbia, and it's a...
It's a different take. I like it. I like it.
I look more like an ironing board. Fuck you. That's
fine. Alex, go ahead. You want to be frozen in a corner somewhere? What's you? What?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Unfrozen out. This is from Corey Corey over on YouTube. What's up, Corey? What is the most glaring hole in your comic book reading history? For me, it is Sandman.
Ooh.
Great question. This is a vulnerability test for us here on this here on this podcast. I mean, the one I realized recently was not reading a comic, but it was that I hadn't seen the original Captain America movie until we were recapping it, and I was like, "Oh shit, I didn't actually see this whole movie." So that was a fun revelation.
I think we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah, I have.
Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. I've never read that.
Yeah,
that's so good. That's really good.
I'm you sure it is. That. It's just I've never gotten around to it.
Great thing to read on like a hot summer day when you're like a little weirded out, you know,
a little swampy,
a little swampy,
feeling a little swampy. Yeah, it's the same. Unfortunately, it's the same for me. Yeah. Swamp Thing. I haven't done it.
All right. Since
mine is sort of tech. Mine's Planetary. I haven't read Planetary.
Ooh.
That's really good too. You should definitely check that out. Why don't we do one last one here and then we'll move on to trivia. This is from First Stand Up Guy. Now that the pandemic is over, not over, are you going to start buying comics from a shop again?
Ooh, exciting.
It is. I still haven't been back to Midtown Comics.
Wow.
For all this time.
Yeah.
I will be in Midtown tomorrow. Maybe I'll pop in. I'm going to have a couple
you
hours.
You should.
Yeah.
You should, you know, pop in, shake some hands, kiss some babies. I'm sure they'd love to see you.
Very not COVID activities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of those.
I'm excited. I got to find a new comic book shop. So it'll be interesting to see what I can find around here. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Philly comic book shop.
That is it for your audience. Yeah, you can put a little. When you go into a Philly comic book shop, you got to tell them if it's wit or wit out whiz.
Oh, always wit. Always wit. Kevin is a little upset that you're skipping his question. I just wanted to point that out.
I am just, since I keep blipping in and out, I feel like, why do we move on to the section that Pete handles? And we will.
Okay. Yeah, he just froze there. So that makes a great point.
It's time for trivia featuring Pete LePage, the star of trivia. Let's do this.
We already had a hand up, Pete. So I'm going to welcome in Michael into the stream.
Oh, okay.
Give you some trivia. Michael T.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Let's welcome him in.
You guys are doing a great job of vamping, by the way.
Oh, great. Yeah, this is part we give back to you, the lovely audience. And
it's not vamping time. It's time for Pete to do the shit.
$25 in the form of a Midtown Comics online gift card. That's right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Clarence Williams III.
Sorry, the background music isn't here, Pablo. Here you go. How's this?
Perfect. No delay. Nice.
Wow, Pablo needs it.
Yeah, he does.
Alex, you don't have to read the reviews that are happening on to the right of my face.
Everybody's a little salty today.
Yeah. Michael in here.
All right. Well, here, Michael, I'm going to try re-inviting you. I'm going to blame Michael this on Crowdcast. I don't think this is my fault. I think this is Crowdcast's fault. That's what I'm saying.
A little late in the show to be throwing the blame around, Alex.
Let him in.
Let him in.
Nat Townsend going back to his real name. Good for you, Nat.
That's great.
All right. Well, if you don't get in, I know this is a little annoying, but why don't you do some trivia in the comments here? Just drop your answer. You'll be able to figure it out, and Pete can read it for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So
here, why don't we do that?
Okay, great. Here we go. Question number one. Who will be the star of Tom King's next comic? Will it be A, Catwoman, B, Supergirl, or is it C, Tommy Chong? So it's either A, Catwoman, don't pick it, or it's B, Supergirl.
Ah, That there's Michael definitely answers. Correct. Michael T is correct.
Yeah, it is B, and it's going to be Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Should be very cool and very excited.
Very cool. Yes, yeah. Me too.
All right, here we go. Question number two. There has been a last minute writing change with Amazing Spider-Man. Who will be the new writer? Is it A, Becky Cloonan? Shout out. B, Ed Brisson? Or is it C, Snoop Dogg? So it's either A, don't pick it, or if you want to be correct, it would be another B.
Another B, he says.
Come on, Michael T, you got this, man. Don't overthink it.
Yeah. B for Beck. That is a great answer.
That's right.
And it is correct, right?
It is correct, yes, but Matt Townsend wrote it and not... and not Michael T.
You
but
take
we'll...
the answers when you can get them, Pete.
Okay, all right. I hear what you're saying. Keep the show moving.
Not everybody has that crispy Zalbin internet.
Okay, there we're Michael all T's just... got the B. All right, here we go. Last one. We have seen giant size X-Men. What is the next size that is coming out in June? Is it A, Galactus size? B, planet size? Or is it C, Willie Nelson? So it's either A, or you could go all B's and go with planet size. That is right, Michael T. It is planet size. X-Men is the next one coming out. And as we all know, I'm talking about the 1998 classic, cult classic, I should say, Half-Baked.
Oh, nice. Thank Great.
You, Kevin. There we go.
And that is a secret quiz that Pete runs in the C answers of the trivia. I think a lot of trivia shows run a separate secret quiz.
Yes, Cuban B.
Michael, you have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we'll get that off to you. Guys, new comics, they're coming out. We're psyched for them. What are you looking forward to that's coming out this week, Justin?
Ooh, great.
Other than Wonder Woman?
Yeah, it's tough because we've already super hyped up the comics that we've talked about on this episode, Birthright 50 and Wonder Woman, I believe, 773. Very excited for both of those books. But to give a one we haven't already talked about, I'm just going to throw it out to X-Men. X-Men 21 is coming out, and it's really a...
It's a repositioning.
It feels like sort of we're moving out of all this overture stuff that Hickman's been doing for the last couple of years with the X-Men and moving into something that feels a little bit larger. Very excited for that. Very excited.
I'm looking forward to Geiger number 3 and the Good Asian number 2. Some really amazing writing, some cool stories. Amazing art.
I'm surprised that you didn't call out Far Sector number 12 from DC Comics, which is the final issue of Far Sector.
Well, another, I will.
So. Great.
When issue. We get to the stack, take that away from me. But yeah.
But the one I'm really excited about, Six Sidekicks, number 1 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Starks. Big fan of what Kyle Starks has been doing. His titles have been really fun, very specific and very creative in their bits. And I've been enjoying them quite a bit. So I'm excited to talk about all of that on our Stack podcast, which rolls out of the Comic Book Club feed and also its own dedicated feed Wednesday at 9 a.m. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Michael W. Conrad and Becky Cloonan for being here. Pick up Wonder Woman on stands now. Joshua Williamson for talking about Birthright. Birthright number 50 from Image Comics is on stands tomorrow. Definitely pick it up as well as the rest of that series. Next week, we're going to have two great guests for you. Julio Anta, the creator of Home, a new Image Comics book that we've been really enjoying a lot, is coming on the show. Yeah. Also, Danny Hedlund, who is the creator of the Literary Tarot that has been tearing up Kickstarter and has a wild creator list on it, is also going to be on the show. A bunch of other things to plug that we have coming out. Candyman, a Sweet Tooth podcast that is running in its own dedicated feed, recapping every day as long as Candy, as well as Candy Reviews, check it out. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, that is the place to check out our Loki recap that is going to be popping up first thing tomorrow morning as we break down every episode of Loki. Once again, that's Marvel Vision. Patreon.com/... Two quick things on those,
oh, Alex. Yeah. Two quick things before. Sorry to interrupt your, but we have a great surprise episode of the Sweet Tooth podcast coming very soon. And we, in our Avengers rewatch, we shouted out Gabrus as Herc. Gabrus for Herc. Who's going to be the next Hercules if we can get the campaign going?
Yeah!
Let's get it going. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live for this podcast and more. Until next time, good night!
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody.